Small Town Podcast is made possible by generous support from the Georgia Municipal Association. GMA supports Georgia cities. Hey, small towners, it's Mayor Matt Seal of the great city of Ocilla, Georgia, and this is a workshop episode of Small Town Podcast. So if you listen to last week's workshop episode, you heard from the Republican candidates for governor who will face off each other in the primary runoff on July 24th. We also had a chance to talk with Democratic nominee for governor, Stacey Abrams, who will face the winner of that runoff. Today, we talk with the Republican candidates for lieutenant governor who must also face each other in a runoff this July. Just as with the runoff candidates for governor, I interviewed them separately but have their responses to each question side by side to make it easier for you to compare the answers. The questions were written by me after getting input from some of the residents of Ocilla and Irwin County, Georgia. If you don't know them already, I've asked the candidates to introduce themselves to you.
I'm David Schaefer. I'm a Republican candidate for Lieutenant Governor of Georgia. I've been privileged to serve in the state Senate for the last 16 years, most recently as President Pro Tem, and I've led on conservative issues that Georgians care about.
My name is Jeff Duncan. I'm candidate for Lieutenant Governor here in the state of Georgia. Excited to be in this runoff. Excited to be able to represent so many folks and their conservative desires here in Georgia. Proud to be a father of three young boys, married to my high school sweetheart, and a follower of Jesus.
Small Town Podcast is supported by the Southern Mercantile. Visit southernmercantile.com for a blog about small town living and an online store with a selection of carefully curated goods. The Southern Mercantile. Simple living, Southern charm. I'm now in the campaign headquarters of Jeff Duncan, candidate for Lieutenant Governor. I'm joined by the same Representative Jeff Duncan. So, Representative Duncan, thanks for joining us again on Small Town Podcast.
Glad to be here for a second time. That means we mission accomplished to make the runoff.
That's right. I was going to start by congratulating you on that. And if you would, just tell us how you feel about how you did, how your numbers shook out, and then what you think it's going to take for you to be victorious in the runoff in July.
Obviously excited. We started this process 15 months ago at completely ground zero. We had no support, probably less than 1%. And we had two mission profiles. One was to keep David Schaefer under 50%, and two was to beat Rick Jeffries and to make sure that we got to the runoff. We felt like if we could get there, we would reset the dollar disadvantage we were at, which was millions of dollars. And we could have a head-to-head runoff for 9 weeks. So here we are, got a runoff. It's humbling to know that nearly 150,000 people voted for us that didn't know us just a few months ago. It's exciting to see the momentum that we're continuing to build and the fundraising that we're continuing to build. So we got 6 weeks left, and I love our chances.
I'm now joined in his campaign headquarters by Senator David Schaefer, candidate for Lieutenant Governor of Georgia. Senator Schaefer, thanks for joining us again on Small Town Podcast.
It's a privilege to have you here in my campaign headquarters in Duluth, Georgia.
All right. First of all, congratulations for making it to the runoff, and I want to just kind of get your sense, how you feel about how you did, and then what you feel like you have to do to clinch the nomination now that you got a runoff in July.
Thank you very much. I'm very proud of our performance on primary election day. It was a three-way race, and we got 49% of the vote. We carried 133 counties, and we placed second in the other 26 counties. I had to do the math there in my head. And the third place finisher, Senator Rick Jeffries, who won about 24% of the vote, he's endorsed us in the runoff, and I feel like we entered this thing with a lot of strong momentum.
All right. Well, before we get into questions about some issues, I do want to bring this up. It's very campaign related. The use of the term career politician has been used a lot during this campaign season, not just in your campaign, but certainly in the campaign for Lieutenant Governor. So tell us how you see yourself in that discussion and maybe how you see your opponent in with the idea of career politicians versus outsider and what that term actually even means.
Yeah, so it's been a huge issue in our race. I'll describe to you the differences between myself and Senator Schaefer. He's been in politics 30 years, and I haven't. I got elected to the State House 5 years ago, talked about it, I think, on our last opportunity to sit down, but it was just kind of a out-of-nowhere thing. It was an opportunity to want to get more involved in our community, and so I ran for a State House seat. So, look, I've only been in office 5 years, and everybody around me said when I was going to run for lieutenant governor that, you know, I'd lost my mind, or, you know, I hadn't paid my dues, or whatever the normal story was. fortunate for me, there's been a couple of folks to come along and pave the way for an outsider kind of platform to have success. One of those is sitting in the White House right now. People are not looking for your political resume anymore. And I think that's probably on both sides of the aisle. I don't think it's just a Republican thing. Folks are looking for individuals that are innovative, that are energetic, and I think honest. I think that's really one of those traits that now with social media and just the attention that campaigns are getting, honesty is one of those things that people are really truly looking at. That's a big separation for me. I think that my background of being a businessman and kind of getting to my solutions through the business world and through those kind of practical solutions, I think is definitely what gives us the opportunity to claim ourselves to be an outsider.
I've served in the General Assembly for 16 years. It's a part-time job. It pays about $17,000 a year, so that's it's really no one's career. I've had business, worked in business outside of my service in the General Assembly in the real estate and insurance business, and I'm proud of my success there, proud of providing jobs for Georgians and contributing to the economy outside of my public service, but I'm proud of my public service too, and proud of the things that I've been able to accomplish as a part-time member of the General Assembly. My opponent served a half decade in the Georgia House of Representatives. He runs around pretending like he was never part of the General Assembly, but he's got the same service that I do and the same record that I do, and I would encourage Georgians to examine carefully the record of accomplishment that he compiled as a member of the General Assembly and the record of accomplishment that I've compiled as well. And I think that when you do that, the contrast is very clear.
All right, I want to move into some more issues-related questions, but just want to kind of set the tone here. So in dealing with issues at the level of the Office of Lieutenant Governor, there are many areas where there's a really broad spectrum of opinions on how to deal with things, maybe even very differing political philosophies. So to me, it seems that you would have to balance sometimes two opposite sides of things. So I want to discuss some of the areas where there may be some balance required and how you see where that balance is. So with regard to services provided to the citizens throughout Georgia, some things are handled by the state government, but many aspects of everyday life are managed at the local level by city and county governments, by local school boards, and various authorities. So I would like you to give us your perspective on the balance between implementing the policies at the state level without taking away the local control from the government that's closest to the people.
Yeah, so I'm one of those folks that believe that the more decisions we can drive down to the local level, the better decision makers we're going to be here in the state of Georgia. I just don't see a lot of folks sitting in cubes in downtown Atlanta coming up with great solutions for your hometown or for my hometown. We need to drive as many of those decisions down to the locals. And that includes a lot of things, right? That's transportation, commerce, and as many taxation issues, but also probably most importantly, education. You know, I think that we have to give the opportunity to allow communities to be invested in their education even more so than they are today. We need to allow communities to be in control of the direction that their students take. I'm one of those that believe the greatest gift the state of Georgia can give a child is a quality K-12 education. If we give quality K-12 education to a child, it doesn't matter what their background is. It doesn't matter what the situation is at home or any of the obstacles that are in their way. If we give them a quality education, they now have an opportunity to feed themselves and care for themselves and their family for a lifetime. I truly believe that we need to drive as many of those decisions down to the locals as we can. And guess what? Not every community is going to be as responsible as they should with that. And that, to me, is what free markets sound like. If your community or my community takes tax dollars and use them wisely and efficiently, then businesses are going to flock to that community. Families are going to flock to that community. I'm fortunate to be one of those communities. I live in Forsyth County in Cumming, and we educate our kids incredibly well here. We have an incredibly competitive environment for business and an attractive housing market. We are a great place that the world's looking at. And I think that's an opportunity for other communities to continue to separate themselves from others.
Well, most government services are delivered on the local level. Most things that people look to government for are delivered by county governments, by municipal governments, and by school boards. And the state plays a supportive role. Roughly half of the state budget is used to support local school boards and the provision of public education. Most of the money that we spend on law enforcement is really in a support role. The GBI is available to assist county sheriffs and local police departments and the enforcement of enforcement of laws. You know, the thing that I've struggled with the most as a member of the state Senate is that the reality that the needs and the interests of Georgians vary greatly from different from part, one part of the state to another. And the laws that we necessarily pass have a statewide application. And so how you balance the varying needs and interests of the state against laws of statewide application is the thing that I think we struggle with the most. But I, you know, I'm proud of the fact that I've on multiple occasions been named a champion of Georgia cities by the Georgia Municipal Association, and at least two times been recognized with awards from the Association of County Commissioner of Georgia because I have been respectful of the role that local government plays and of the importance of decisions being made as close as possible to the people.
So there's been a great focus recently on rural Georgia and the increasing gaps in economic development and healthcare access and education, among other categories, between the rural parts of the state and then the higher populated metro areas. How would you intend to balance the possibly divergent goals of helping close those gaps in some of those areas all across the state, while at the same time trying to do things that keep Georgia a top state to do business in, just like we are now?
Yeah, so I've gotten to have a couple of really good opportunities to spend time in rural Georgia over the last few years. One was when I wrote the Rural Healthcare Relief Bill, which is going to bring nearly $200 million worth of rural healthcare relief directly to these hospitals through a tax credit program. So I've spent a bunch of time getting to know rural Georgia when I was working on that. And now on the campaign trail, almost every day is spent somewhere in rural Georgia, kind of understanding their issues. And here's what I think. I think the best fix for communities that are struggling with both losing population and economic growth and it's just the overall future of their community, I think it's a strong economy. I think we're never going to figure out the right ways to subsidize from a state or federal level into these communities. I don't think we're ever going to find the right formula to just, you know, try to help them through a checkbook. I think we need to look for opportunities to allow them to grow their own economies, look for opportunities to bring industry in, to remove regulation, to help them look for opportunities for growth, to not just create jobs for a season, but to create jobs for a generation. I developed this program, and really it was in traveling through West Point, Georgia, just a few months ago, sitting there talking to their kind of group of influencers and their mayor, and sitting there and saying, look, I used to come through West Point as a kid, and it didn't look like this, right? Everything was boarded up, and there was, you know, one little store open, and I said, tell me what's going on. Obviously, I knew that Kia was there, but we talked about that process, and what I realized was, if we could create rural Georgia as the production capital of the Southeast, or even for the country, right? Let's be real big in how we dream. But let's be the production capital of the Southeast for companies that want to come here and build their products here in Georgia. Let's do it in rural Georgia, right? Let's look for an opportunity. And I called it BIG, Built in Georgia, right? That's the program I want to champion as lieutenant governor. And allow these communities to find ways to be involved in their own success, to be able to find a way to work together as a community and to leverage the talents and the resources that they have. And so that, to me, is the ultimate way to balance that. We're just not going to we're not going to create enough little government programs that help rural Georgia. Let's look for the ways to get government out of their way at the state level and at the federal level to allow them to be a part of their own future.
This is one of the instances where I don't think there's divergent interests. I mean, Georgia's going to experience tremendous growth. I don't think that the people in Atlanta want all of that growth to happen in Atlanta. All of Georgia needs to share in that prosperity. And there's a couple of things that we need to do to make sure that rural Georgia fully participates in the growth that's to come. One is we've got to make sure that we've got a healthcare delivery system that is delivering both routine and emergency healthcare to every part of the state. No business is going to come somewhere or expand somewhere where their employees do not have access to adequate health care. And our healthcare system is fragile, and it needs to be bolstered. And I think there's a state role in that. And part of that, frankly, involves rethinking how we deliver health care services. We passed legislation during this session of the General Assembly to advance sort of the micro hospital approach. Instead of having, you know, full hospitals in every town, trying to make sure that healthcare is distributed in a trying to think of 21st century ways to make sure that, that healthcare is available. Telemedicine, I think, can play a role as well. But telemedicine doesn't work unless you've got access to broadband internet service. And that's sort of a second area that we've got to concentrate on. Young people are not going to remain or move to an area that's not connected to the rest of the world with a broadband connection to the internet. And I think we've got to make the same determination about the internet that we made about the telephone 120 years ago, that every home and business ought to be connected to each other through a universal system of telephone service. The same ought to be true with the internet. I believe there's a state role in that as well. Moving back to healthcare for just a minute, we've done things through the Medicaid program to make it more attractive for healthcare providers to locate in rural areas. We increased the Medicaid reimbursement for OBGYN for baby deliveries in rural areas to encourage OBGYNs to remain there. I mean, rural Georgia has so much to offer in terms of tight-knit communities and beautiful landscapes. And we just have to make sure that the infrastructure of the state, and that's not just roads and bridges, but the internet and our healthcare system are serving every Georgian.
And kind of as a follow-up, there's several bills that were proposed just this year, some of which passed and were signed into law to help address some of the rural issues. The Center for Rural Prosperity was created. It's now based at ABAC down in Tifton. In addition, Governor Deal created a new position in the Department of Economic Development that is the Deputy Commissioner for Rural Georgia Initiatives. It's now filled by former State Representative Amy Carter. So what do you think about these steps? And then what if any, would be your next steps? And I've been asking this too. How do we make sure? Now, those steps are good. I've actually gotten to speak to Amy Carter about her new role. And so there's obviously possibilities there. But how do we make sure that doesn't become just another department or an extra thing in a bigger bureaucracy?
I think it's a great first step, but we've got to recognize that it's just a first step. It's not actually going to fix the problem. It's going to help us better identify the problem and help us identify potential solutions. But at the end of the day, we need to be asking more questions of what rural Georgia needs instead of telling rural Georgia what they need, right? Each community is going to be different too. Right. If you look at this through a business equation, right, if you run a company and you got 8 or 9 different divisions, they're going to have different needs and wants and stress points. We need to look at every opportunity to ask rural Georgia, what is it that is not going right? What is it that you need, you know, more control over? What regulation or barrier is hindering you from bringing this new opportunity to you? Here was a couple of the mindsets that just shocked me. When I got to the Capitol 5 years ago, I knew nothing about how politics worked in Georgia, right? I knew what my conservative principles were and my values. But here was what I quickly picked up. Way too many people underneath the Gold Dome think people live in rural Georgia because they have to. That's not the case. People live in rural Georgia because they want to. And I think that's an important recognition. They're not living there because they have to. That's where they call home. That's where their family's at. That's where their farm or their industry or just the way of life, the pace of life. That's what draws them in and keeps them there. I think that's an important recognition. So these are all great first steps. I'm glad we're having a big, robust conversation about this. But nothing's going to get fixed until we start to do stuff. Until we start to recognize the true stress points. Education is a huge part of that. If we don't better educate our kids in rural Georgia, they're going to continue to take the opportunity to leave when they can and not come back and be a part of what the future of that community looks like. K-12 education, we look at 2-year school opportunities, we look at 4-year school opportunities, we look for workforce development opportunities, have got to be a big part of what is the development process in rural Georgia. We're taking steps in that direction. I want to see us continue to take even bigger, faster steps.
That's up to us to monitor. I mean, I think those are important first steps, but they're first steps. Creating an Institute of Rural Prosperity in and of itself doesn't do anything. It's the work that comes out of it. And I think we need to harness our best minds to develop a comprehensive strategy for making sure that prosperity is shared by all Georgians. But I think that the framework of it is to make sure that there's adequate infrastructure, roads and bridges, connection to the internet, and healthcare, and that if you do those things, that prosperity will come. Now, part of it also is making sure that you've got an educated and prepared workforce. One of the mistakes that we've made as a society in the last 30 years is to stigmatize technical education and drive all young people to liberal arts colleges. the reality is that if you can plumb or weld or fit pipes, you will never want for work. And you will make more money than many people that graduated with me from the University of Georgia with liberal arts degrees. And so I think we've got to strengthen our system of technical education. We've taken steps in that direction with the creation of the college and career academies, the strengthening of our technical colleges, the expansion of joint enrollment programs. You know, we've got to make sure that as businesses located in areas that they're skilled and ready workers to take advantage of the jobs that are created there.
So the topic of immigration in this year's campaigns in our state, they made some national news. So this too, to me, would seem like a bit of a balancing act. With Georgia's economic engine burning hot overall, with our ranking as the number one state to do business and a low unemployment rate that's worth bragging about, some would argue that we actually need the immigrant workforce that we have in order to continue these trends. This is especially true in agriculture, which is, of course, Georgia's number one industry, where legislation against the migrant workforce has literally resulted in fruit rotting in the fields in past years. So how do you plan to balance the competing goals of immigration control with our longstanding reliance on the labor they provide to some of Georgia's biggest industries?
So those that have lived life around Jeff Duncan realize, and we'll tell you up front, one of the first things they recognize is I'm a rule follower. I mean, I just am always a rule follower, right? That's just how I'm wired. It's how I was raised. And so immigration for me, you know, I hear this out on the campaign trail over the last couple of years, illegal immigration. And to me, that's an oxymoron, right? Or they're competing issues, right? Illegal is an uncontrolled, chaotic process. Immigration is a controlled, well-documented process. I don't know how we piece those two together. I look at this issue as we need some federal direction. We need to have some federal direction. I believe we have a president who's looking into and bringing up the points of immigration. I don't know where we go with that. I hope that Congress takes a serious step into this. But here's what I know. We are a nation founded on laws. Whether we like laws, whether we think they make us more money, or they cost us money, we are a nation of laws. And I think the best way forward, we have to continue to follow the laws that are in place. If we want to change the laws, I don't recommend breaking the laws to do that. I recommend us changing the laws if that's something that needs to happen. Those industries need to step forward and continue to talk and continue to bring up what best practices are forward. But at the end of the day, this is a nation of laws, and I'm going to follow those laws.
Obviously, America is a nation of immigrants and their descendants, from the American Indians who immigrated here from Asia when they crossed the frozen straits of Alaska tens of thousands of years ago, to the people that have come subsequently. No one's opposed to lawful immigration, and we do have a problem that we have got to fix on a national level. I mean, I support President Trump's call to secure the border and to build a wall, because nations that lose control of their borders cease to be nations. You can look throughout world history, from the American Indians to the ancient Romans. If you do not control your border, you will cease to be a nation. But we've also got to put in a system that makes sure that there is a lawful mechanism for workers that we need to come into this country. And I think we've got an immigration system that is entirely screwed up and needs to be thought through from top to bottom. I don't know why we have a lottery to decide who should come here. We ought to identify the jobs that need to be filled, the skills that those jobs that are required, and then allow the people to come here that can fill those jobs, as opposed to the crazy system that we have in place that doesn't allow the people to come here lawfully that we need, and that has millions of people just crossing the border illegally to fill the jobs that need filling.
And with all the good things that are going on in Georgia, we have some rising issues that threaten our economic development and in some ways the very fabric of our society. We have an opioid epidemic, as well as an increase in mental and behavioral health issues among our citizens. All of these are a heavy burden on our law enforcement agencies. This obviously has a further effect on families and children, and has continued to put a heavy burden on the Department of Human Services and the Department of Family and Children's Services, DFACS. So how do you see the balance between individual personal responsibility and where the government should step in? And maybe we could look at this as how much this is a law enforcement issue balanced out with providing services to combat addiction and against some of those mental and behavioral health issues. And what plans do you have, if any, to address some of those if you're elected lieutenant governor?
the opioid crisis, the mental health challenges that we continue to see and hear affect virtually every family in this state. I mean, we all have our own tragic stories of those that are close to us, whether it be family members or friends or coworkers, that have just seen the entire direction of their entire family changed in a second. You know, and you talk about personal responsibility, and it is a balance. But here's where I've always had this mindset. I wrote this op-ed. I can't remember if we discussed this last time or not, but I'm going to take a chance to talk about it again, is the four C's. I wrote an op-ed a number of years ago, and I'm not an author or writer, but it was just something that was on my heart. The four C's: churches, charities, corporations, and citizens. I believe the front lines of defense against many of these challenges that we face in our communities today ought to be, the front lines ought to be the four C's. A church that wants to be engaged, you know, a corporation that feels like they're drawn to it, a corporation, a citizen, a charity. These are groups that I believe are better equipped than any government program or agency would ever be at trying to jump into some of these issues, even to expand them into, you know, not just opioids, not just mental health, but foster care, adoption, homelessness, hunger, healthcare for low-income individuals. I believe we ought to give the four C's the first opportunity to go in and make a difference. And here's why. I think, one, the four C's are better at taking care of these needs than any government program's ever been or going to be. I mean, if you think about it, on its best day, a government program is only going to stabilize a situation or a family when faced with a crisis like this. The four C's bring things to work with them every day, like volunteerism. That's still free, right? A passion to make a difference. They're getting up and going to work to volunteer because they have a passion to make a difference in somebody's life. And probably most importantly, they have exit strategy on the tip of their tongue. And so as the lieutenant governor here in Georgia, I want to leverage the talents and the resources of the four C's for a couple of selfish reasons too. One, because they're better at it, and I think they're going to be more effective at it. But two, from a fiscal effect, we all want to talk about tax reform and lowering what the government spends on everything. This is an opportunity for us to really do that and take these dollars that we're trying to spend in very clunky, just long-rooted government programs and allow us to transfer that into the four C's, which ultimately is the community, to dig in and to have a positive effect in these people's lives and truly have a vested interest in changing the direction of their lives. You know, but look, it's a mentality shift. When I spent my 5 years at the Capitol, I just was shocked that the mentality is we, the government, have the solution for everything. You got to truly wake up and believe we, the people, have the solutions. And that takes time and that takes trust. I believe we, the people, are better at it than we, the government. And so as Lieutenant Governor, these issues and 100 of others that are out there. And this is one of these areas for me that I'm passionate about. I wrote the Rural Healthcare Bill solely based upon that. Right, I wrote the Rural Healthcare Bill on giving communities the ability to take hundreds of millions of dollars worth of their dollars and laser focus it on their problems and not send it to a clunky office in Atlanta or DC and expect those dollars to come back at a fraction of the amount. If we do this right in Georgia, we're going to lead ourselves, but we're also going to lead a nation on how to be the most giving nation truly in the world.
I will tell you, at the root of the problem is the breakdown of the family. I mean, half of the babies born in Georgia today are going to be raised in households with no positive male role model. And I think that that is a tragedy. If you look at the gangs that are increasingly becoming a problem in the state, I would guarantee you that 100% of the members are coming from families where there was no positive male role model when those boys were young. That's not to say that everybody who's raised by a single parent joins a gang, but almost everybody who joins a gang comes from a home that is broken. And we've got to figure out a way to reassemble those homes. And I would argue that government had a role in breaking up those homes to begin with. You know, in the 1960s, we made a determination with the very best of intentions that we ought to help single moms who were struggling to raise children. And we developed a system of support that frankly incentivized the birth of out-of-wedlock children and punished mothers who married the fathers of those children. And I think that's contributed to the problem that we face today. And so many of the other problems that you talked about stem from that. The opioid crisis is particularly tragic because it's one that has developed so rapidly under our watch. And once people fall victim to this addiction, it's almost impossible for them to break on their own. And it's going to require a societal intervention. But people who become addicted to these drugs, they're trying to fill a hole in their lives. And, you know, we've got to, I think, spend some time thinking about exactly what hole it is that they're trying to fill and how we make that hole a lot smaller.
I want to give you a chance now to speak directly to the audience and tell them why you should clinch the nomination against your opponent in July and ultimately be elected Lieutenant Governor in November.
Well, one, thanks for this entire opportunity. This has been an incredible opportunity for us to get our message out and to talk to folks all over Georgia. You know, this has been an amazing opportunity for my wife and my three kids to run for Lieutenant Governor. It's been an honor for us. It's been an honor to share our message with literally millions of people across the state. Here's why I think I'm the best candidate, because I think I've got the best perspective, right? I look through the challenges that the voters are looking through, that the taxpayers are looking through, and just the folks all across Georgia. I've got three kids in a public school system. I'm a small business guy. I'm married to my high school sweetheart. I pay taxes just like everybody else does. I've got the best perspective to walk into the Georgia Capitol, to lead the Georgia State Senate, not in a way that takes politics more important than policy. Every room I walk into, I champion policy over politics. And look, at the end of 4 years, if I get to fortunate enough to win this election, Georgia's going to have an opportunity to look up and say, we're either going to reelect Jeff Duncan or we're not. They're either going to say, he doesn't care enough about politics. He's too worried about policy. My guess is that's not going to be the case. Georgia is thirsty for a policy over politics platform, and I'm proud to champion that everywhere I go.
All right, I'll give you an opportunity to speak directly to the audience as to why you should be the pick for the Republican nomination and ultimately for the general election selection for Lieutenant Governor of Georgia.
Well, I've served for 16 years in the state Senate, and I've led on the issues that Georgians care about. I wrote the state zero-based budgeting law, which requires every penny of state spending to be periodically rejustified. I have wrote the constitutional amendment to put a cap on the state income tax. We're the only state in the union that has enshrined in its constitution the promise that we'll forever be a low-tax state. I have wrote the bill signed into law by Governor Perdue that subjects all occupational regulations to periodic review to make sure that they are actually serving the health and the welfare of the state and have not become an unnecessary bureaucratic impediment to people entering professions. I rewrote the state's telecom law 8 years ago, recognizing the convergence of the cable telephone television industry and the traditional telephone industry into basically the same industry where those companies are all providing telephone and internet and video services. I rewrote the state's HMO law. I helped pass the first ever income tax cut earlier this year. On issues that Georgians care about, I have been a leader. And did I mention, Mayor, that I've also three times been recognized as a champion of Georgia's cities by the Georgia Municipal
Association. I think you said that earlier.
I might have the exact number wrong, but I've got several plaques, or they're actually pictures from the Georgia Municipal Association hanging in my office because I've tried to be aligned with the good work that organization and its members do.
Representative Jeff Duncan, thanks for joining us again on Small Town Podcast.
Thank you so much. TeamDuncan.org.
Well, Senator Schaefer, thanks again for joining us, and just appreciate you being a part of Small Town Podcast.
Well, listen, thanks for what you're doing. This is a tremendous public service. I enjoyed being on this program earlier this year, and I appreciate your making the trek up here to Duluth, Georgia, to visit with me, and thank you again for all that you do.
I appreciate that. Well, small towners, that'll do it for this workshop episode of Small Town Podcast. I want to thank Representative Jeff Duncan and Senator David Schaefer for sitting down with me. Remember that whoever holds this office and the other offices that are up for election this year, these will affect our lives for the next 4 years and maybe beyond. If the answers in these episodes did not satisfy you, please take the initiative to research these candidates to see how they feel about the issues that are important to you. The runoff is July 24th, and early voting begins on July 2nd. Please exercise your right to vote and encourage others to do the same. As always, I want to thank our ever-faithful sponsors, the Georgia Municipal Association and the Southern Mercantile. I'll talk to you soon, and y'all are welcome to come to Osceola anytime.